On this episode of The Good Word, Dan Titus joins us to discuss last night's NBA Cup games and what's going on with LeBron. And Ice Young joins us with thoughts on Reggie Miller's commentary last night and a preview of the upcoming WNBA expansion draft. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. Before we get into the show, a couple of bits of business to get into. If you haven't already, please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and make sure you leave us a rating and a review wherever you are listening to the audio podcast. And on Wednesdays, we will be joined by my man, Dan Titus, in addition to Ice Young. Dan, I'm glad you're here. You're a member of this Yahoo family, been around for a while, man, so I'm glad you're able to join me on Wednesdays. This will be the blackest Wednesdays Yahoo Sports will ever be around. Producer John, that is why you're here. You are here for diversity. Before we get into the show, of course, we got to get into this knockout round. Of course, next Tuesday, Bucks and Magic in Milwaukee. That's going to be a really good matchup. Also, Thunder, Mavericks in Oklahoma City. I'm really intrigued by that one. Knicks and Hawks at Madison Square Garden. Of course, Trae Young is going to try to do the Trae Young things. And Warriors Rockets in Houston. Ime Udoka lost his damn mind last night. But I think we need to start, Dan, with Mavs Grizzlies, because for a long time, it looked like the Grizzlies were going to win their seventh straight game and keep on the upward climb in the Western Conference and everything else. And suddenly, something happened in the fourth quarter where Spencer Dinwiddie went crazy and Luka Doncic did Luka things. Like, how did you see last night playing out for Dallas?
I mean, that's what you want to see for Dallas. I think that they've lost a lot of close games this year in the clutch. And when you have these teams, honestly, like the Memphis Grizzlies, they've been rolling, but they just don't have that half-court offense. Ja Morant accounted for 71% of their points in the fourth quarter. That's not going to win you a playoff game, and I think that this is why the Dallas Mavericks are such a dangerous team. I wasn't expecting Spencer Dinwiddie to step up like this, but I mean, he's been putting it together ever since Klay Thompson left the lineup with his foot injury. He's been playing really well, so I think he's actually found a home in this rotation for now. But the play of PJ Washington is something I wanted to talk about. Since this guy came back from his injury, he's been averaging 17 points, 9 boards, 4 assists, shooting over 60% from the field. The way that he was just impacting the game in the fourth, the rebounding, the scoring, the 3-point shooting, this team is dangerous with this many shooters around Luka. And then, you know, we could always talk about Luka and what he does and his impact in clutch moments. But I think that this team has actually turned around. This was a huge win for the Dallas Mavericks. And I think it begs some questions for the Memphis Grizzlies of, like, are you guys going to continue to have the same half court issues that's plagued you over the last few years?
I'm curious because one thing I've realized about Ja, A, he's trying to stay healthy. Like he talked about, I'm not trying to dunk. Y'all think I'm lying, blah, 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 blah. I don't know how long that's going to last. But I do think with his style, he is very careful about putting himself in harm's way and putting themselves in these weird positions. And I'm completely understanding of that. His jumper is not yet evolved enough, and he doesn't operate in the mid-range to diversify his game enough to where he can relinquish a lot of that athleticism. Like, that's his gift. His gift is, I can blow by you. The one thing that I will say, and I don't know if maybe he's proven it yet, but I'll see what you think. I think, and maybe this is just a hunch more than anything else, Dan, I feel like Ja can read a game well enough to win you a game in the fourth quarter the same way that Luka can win you a game in the fourth quarter. The problem is, who is your secondary option for Memphis to take the ball out of his hands when defenses start loading up and you can just give him a break as opposed to him had controlling every single possession? I think that's the question, as opposed to, man, can Ja do this? I think he can, but I think you need to develop secondary options, right?
Yeah, I think right now they're still trying to figure out what Desmond Bane is, because I think he's coming off of that oblique injury. He's been ramping up. This is the second game he's played over 30 minutes, and he had a good game shooting from the field, but like in the clutch, where were you at? So I think that this is something that we're going to have to continue to monitor. I don't think Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be someone that you can rely on offensively in the clutch. I think the answer is Desmond Bane. And if it's not Desmond Bane, then I think we have bigger issues at stake here. I love the way that Santi Aldama's been playing off the bench. Yeah. Scottie Pippen Jr. has been a really good help for them as well. But they're going to need Bane to be the number two that he's been in the past. And right now, I think he's just playing through injury, trying to kind of get out of that shooting funk that he's in right now.
Wait, now that you think about it, did you see Scottie Pippen last night? The senior Scottie Pippen. Did you see him? He looked like a black cowboy. And I don't mean that in no good way. Because he's been on Twitter acting a damn fool, posting a picture of the Muskie man saying, how many more championships would we have won if he was on the team? That man got a 2-inch vertical. What are you talking about here, Scottie? I got no problem with Scottie Pippen Jr.
I'll keep it to younger Scottie, man. Younger Scottie's the one I'm acknowledging right now. I don't know about what old head's doing, man. He's wilding out here.
And I can separate father from son. I know people are saying, Vinny, you going to be hard on Scottie Pippen Jr. because of his daddy. No, I'm not. I know how to separate. His son is going to be just fine. I actually think in fourth quarters, you can play or you would have the option to play the Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
Or Pippen or Scottie Jr. with Ja to take Ja a little bit off the ball, to have him play two more, to have him come off of curls and different actions as opposed to him staring down the barrel of five defenders in his face at all times. I think that's just something they're just going to have to maneuver. But Scottie Pippen out here in a black cowboy hat after posting a picture of the Muskie man. Man, get out of here.
Nah, the Muskie man.
The Muskie man. That's what I call him, the Muskie man. Like, need some deodorant. Nah. The second game I want to hit to, because I saw this, like I was at Detroit, Milwaukee. Maybe we'll hit on that. Maybe we won't. The longer the shorter that is, if Giannis gets a real mid-range jumper, the league has a problem on its hands. That's all I'm going to say about that. The league has a problem. If Giannis's game is much more than being the screener in the role at the same time, and he's hitting from 16 to 18, we have a problem. But let's go to another team with problems, Dan. The Golden State Warriors. I think they've lost six straight or something crazy to the Nuggets. They had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. It looked like the whole strength and numbers thing. And then Nikola Jokic says, give me that, right? There was the last second play. I think it was Christian Braun who called a timeout that he didn't have and everything else. And Steve Kerr lost his damn mind. And they want to focus on that. But to me, Dan, this is glaringly clear that Stephen Curry is being done a disservice by everything happening in that Golden State Warriors organization by not having him a second guy. I can't name his second best player. And while it's real cute to be playing 12 dudes, you need a real number two dude out there because teams are loading up on him and he's not getting easy looks at all.
At all. And this has been the eighth straight loss for the Warriors.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. There we go.
Crazy. But yeah, I think you're right. They are doing him a disservice because Steph, his efficiency is suffering as a result of having to do everything. Draymond Green missed Wednesday night's game. I don't even know what day it is. Tuesday night's game. And I think there's some concern there. He talked about it on his podcast about how he felt something different, something that needed to be addressed. And he wants to get ahead of it early. He's getting an MRI. If Draymond Green misses any games, that's going to be even more detrimental to this team. And he's been playing very well, way better than last year. And when you don't have a number two to rely on now, I think it just puts Steph in such a precarious position where it's like he's doing too much. And this is not sustainable. I talked about it how earlier on, how the Golden State Warriors were kind of bucking the trend of like, oh, we can play and win with depth. But I think now those deep rotations are starting to kind of show the faults and the flaws of this squad. Buddy Hield is not playing the same way that he was in the beginning of the season. Brandon Podziemski is not stepping up the way that the Warriors or Warriors fans expected him to. And there's just not much else on this team that can really step up to give Steph that other boost of who's going to go get 20 on a consistent basis. Wiggins isn't that guy. Kuminga hasn't proven to be that guy. And the Warriors know that because that's why they haven't given him a new contract. So at this point, I think that the Warriors need to make a move. They should have made one in the offseason before this gets a little bit out of hand.
Well, the Podziemski thing is super interesting to me because they have pretty much labeled him as untouchable. And I'm trying to see what it was that they see that puts him in bubble wrap. Like, no, you know how you get some new kicks and you put them in bubble wrap because you don't want them to get yellowed or nothing like that. I put Brandon Podziemski in rice because, like, you know, you put the batteries in the freezer back in the day and be like, man, I get a little more juice.
A little bit more juice.
It doesn't, the numbers don't look good. He doesn't look very confident out there. He doesn't look like he believes he belongs. And when you have him out there in a like a secondary playmaker spot with Draymond out, so now you're not swinging the ball to Draymond and Steph is relocating. You're swinging the ball to Pazemski and you're telling him to make a play. And I don't know if that is something that is his best use of right now. And the league has tape on him. They know what he's going to do. Oh, he's a lefty. He's going to go left. He's going to do the Euro. He's going to try to create space. Oh, we're shutting all that down. And now he's shooting, I think, I look at the numbers. Dan, he's shooting 39% from the field. 21 from three.
That was supposed to be the step of where he was taking that leap. I mean, he was, like, what, 30 plus, like high 30s last year? So
Yeah.
That's a huge, huge miss for the Warriors if he doesn't right this ship. And I mean, I think Steve Kerr was pretty vocal about it. The poor decision making, getting too much in his head. That all sounds like a sophomore slump to me. And you can't afford a sophomore slump with Steph Curry sitting next to you in the backcourt.
No, not if Steph Curry is 36 years old.
No.
And you know that you have to maximize the best of the rest of his career, where I think he's a better basketball player in terms of like his feel and his sense of timing, knowing where to be on the floor and everything else. But he's 36 years old, so you have to make sure that his minutes are monitored. He's not a super freak like LeBron. He's not even a tall freak like Kevin Durant. He's a reasonably sized human being, which means he's playing in the land of giants, and you got to be really, really careful about that. I think they, when the trade market opens up on December 15th, they need to be hunting because they were supposedly hunting over the summer. They didn't want to give up pieces for Lauri Markkanen. Maybe that wasn't the right move. They didn't want to get fully involved in the Paul George sweepstakes. That might have been a smart decision, but they better do something, right? Better do something. Even still, it might not matter if Oklahoma City is as good as we think they are, right? They're number one overall seed in the NBA Cup, number one in the West. They beat the Jazz last night. Now, granted, the Jazz are in the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes, right? It was just keep it right there. It looks like a collision course, right? Cooper Flagg, Utah Jazz. They're not sending Cooper Flagg to the Washington Wizards. I'm not saying the lottery is rigged. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that in the least. I'm just saying that the draft will not work the Washington Wizards way because it won't. Not for Cooper Flagg. Now, it took us a long time last year. I think it did. At least for me, Dan. It took me a long time to believe what I was seeing with the Boston Celtics. With them launching all the threes and me thinking to myself, I don't know if this is going to work during the playoffs. At some point, you're going to need Kristaps Porzingis to really make an impact. And he didn't really have to up until that point. He didn't really have to, you know what I'm saying, for the entire season. I think he played maybe 25 games or so. Are we seeing something very similar with the Oklahoma City Thunder? I think Charles Barkley last night said on Inside the NBA, the Thunder are the best team in the NBA, which is crazy talk to me considering what we've seen from the Celtics as the defending champions. But is Chuck on to something here?
I think Chuck is just being a bit much here. I mean, I don't think they're that far behind, right? Like, they had the best record in the West last year. They're dominating the Western Conference right now. They have the top defensive rating in the league. Their offense hasn't even been humming to the point of what it could be. Chet Holmgren's out. Imagine if when he comes back. I mean, that hip injury could be a difficult one to come back from. But Isaiah Hartenstein has been playing crazy. And the fact that they have him now as that anchor to supplement Chet Holmgren on top of having SGA and Jalen Williams having an all-NBA career year across the board, this team is tough. And I think one thing that speaks to the culture of Oklahoma City was like, I forget who was talking about it, but it was like integrating with the Oklahoma City Thunder is like, you know that they're going to play hard on both sides of the ball every game. They're all locked in. The connectivity that they have as a unit, all playing for each other. No one has the ego. That's a dangerous, dangerous format for anybody unit going into the playoffs. So like, yeah, they're the odds on favorite in the West and they should be. Are they better than the Celtics? I'm not ready to go there yet.
Look, man. If the NBA is listening, like, come closer. Like, come on, come closer. I beg of you. June is a month in my life that belongs to y'all, right? I get to see a lot of good friends, hang out every night, jump on planes, all this other type of stuff. Do not have me in Boston or Oklahoma City for a whole 2.5 weeks. I beg of y'all to do something. Like, can y'all send me to Phoenix? Can Milwaukee come in and crash the party?
Dallas.
Because Milwaukee is close enough to Chicago that I can make a drive to Chicago, go to Chicago, cut, hang out. You know what I mean? But I'm rooting for me here in terms of the NBA Finals. One, I don't want to see a three-point shooting contest in June. B, I don't want to be in Boston and Oklahoma City. I can take one without the other. I just can't be there. I just can't be both of them places, Dan. That would
I've never been to
me.
Oklahoma City, so I feel you. And I've been to Boston. I'm like, yeah, I definitely feel you.
Well, when we go to Boston, we get the nice friendly welcome that says, welcome. Right. Nice that you're here. Move it along now. Keep it moving now. Keep it moving now. Great to see you. Have a good time. When we come back, we're going to pause for a second to pay some bills. We're going to talk about LeBron James and if it's time. Y'all know what time it is. Is it time? Welcome back to The Good Word here with Dan Titus. Dan, I feel like, in the words of Charles Barkley, it's time to have a conversation, right? I'm not going to be the person to say that the end is coming for LeBron James, because it could very well be, like, right? Like, I remember there was a time, Dan, this is a real quick story when I was a beat writer. I was covering the Pistons, and LeBron was back with the Cleveland Cavaliers, like his first year back. And it was like a game in December, like right after Christmas. The Pistons had just released Josh Smith. That's how long ago it was. They just released Josh Smith. They start going on this crazy run. Like, the second game of the run was going to Cleveland to play the Cavs. And they blew the Cavs out. And LeBron James looked like he could barely move. Like, he looked like Fred Sanford. A little bit, I'm coming home to you. That's how bad he looked that game. That man took 2 weeks off. He went to Miami. He came back a lean, mean, crime-fighting machine. And that was 10 years ago. So you can wipe your ass with saying that LeBron is finished. I will give you the floor and say the last five game stretches we've seen from LeBron James, which has been amongst one of the worst stretches, if not the worst stretch of his career. Is this something, or is this a stretch of a guy who's playing too much?
They play 5 and 7 nights. Like, I thought that the NBA was going to get better about scheduling these games, especially around the face of the league. This is what you get. The man is damn near 40. And you know what I'm saying? Like, he's a little bit tired. And I think that that's fair. Look at how much he's having to do for the Lakers. They need another ball creator. They need another person to facilitate the offense. Austin Reeves has been out of the lineup. You know it's bad when D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura are your best options on offense. Like, that's not a good game. Anthony Davis also looks worn out. This isn't going to work if those two aren't able to be able to withstand the 82-game schedule. And the amount of minutes that both of them are playing right now, J.J. Redick's got to figure something out. The X's and O's, he's got that down pat. But Rob Pelinka needs to get to work, because they need something to take off some of this workload from Bron. He's not washed. He's not cooked. Yes, his efficiency is down because he's settling for more jumpers. He needs to get to the line more. He needs to get more downhill. I think that will come with time and rest. But the fact remains, this team is flawed, and they need a lot of help to take some of that burden off of LeBron.
Man, I'll tell you what looks bad. Because I thought the start of the season, when he was shooting like 42 or 43 from three, I think this is a little bit more of a water finding this level, right?
Yeah, he's regressing. Like, he wasn't going to shoot 40% for the year. Like, he's going to end up somewhere around that 36%.
You would think, right? But this is the thing that catches me with LeBron. His on-off numbers are ghastly, right? Like, that's the one of those things that you look at and you're like, mate, wait, how good are you when your team is on the floor per 100 possessions? They're minus 6.4 points per 100 possessions. When they're off, minus 16. So he's still critically important to them, but they're still getting outscored by a margin that is very un-LeBron-like compared to just last year. Like, legit, just last year, Dan, this is his on-off was plus 4.1 points per 100 possessions, plus 9.9 per 100 possessions when he's off. You know what I'm saying? Like, the on-off numbers. Mm. So he was still a plus player. It doesn't look like he's a plus player right now. Now, some of those stats don't always tell the complete truth, but I do think they tell a story. And Dan, if his jumper has completely fallen off the face of the earth. Like that game against Minnesota, where he shot maybe three of them things. I don't know what type of player he can, or how effective he can be if he's not finishing at the rim and he's not able to level you off by being a plus perimeter shooter.
Yeah. I think that that's where I feel like, I think that this is where time is going to make the difference, right? Like, I think LeBron was very honest to the media about, yo, we suck on offense right now. We've been spending all of our time worried about our defensive assignments, and it's kind of come at the sacrifice of us being able to play competent offensive basketball. They're going to be better, but this team is not going to win a championship. The question is, what can they do? And I don't know how many moves they can make based on their cap situation and the assets that they have to move up into that echelon of, oh, we're a championship contending team. Because really, we're just playing with, like, is LeBron just riding this out? We already got the Bronny moment. What more does he have left to accomplish? And if that's the case, all right, maybe we see him tinker his minutes down to probably around 28 to 30 minutes over the course of the next few weeks, let him get his body right. This team ends up finishing middle of the pack in the Western Conference, and then their first second round exit at best.
It's a weird thing for me, honestly, because I'm looking at it and saying, okay, not if this continues, but I've always felt or started to feel like next year will be the last year for LeBron. Just what else are you playing for? You got the scoring record. You're not on a team that's contending for a championship. I don't think the Lakers have done a bad job. I just think of surrounding him. Like, Austin Reeves was a really good pickup for them out of the non-drafted players, right? Dalton Knecht looks really, really good to be a guy that you got 16th. Like, if there were a redraft done, he'd probably be a top four, top five pick. Anthony Davis is playing some of the most impactful basketball of his career, especially on defense. Like, the looking at the scoring is one thing, but I feel like defensively, he's been a top three, top four defender on a nightly basis. This is only a car that LeBron James can drive. I don't think there's another guy that you can bring in. You couldn't bring in like a Zach LaVine or a DeMar DeRozan when he was out there and say, okay, this is how it works. I feel like in today's NBA, if you got two stars that are making the upper echelon of the supermax, the old max, you know what I mean? You don't have much space to go and get impact players. Like, you're going to have to win because LeBron James and Anthony Davis are going to be the dudes to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think having to rely on the Gabe Vincents and
D'Lo, I mean, hasn't been bad. And everybody makes D'Lo the scapegoat.
He's been great the last five games. He had a stint where he was kind of struggling, but that's D'Lo. That's the ride that you take with D'Lo. And I don't know how much he's going to fetch on the open market. So, like, I think you're pretty much stuck.
Right. You're landlocked.
And so, like, if this is what it is, the Lakers, I don't think LeBron is cooked. I think the Lakers are cooked. And it's just a matter of time. And if this is going to continue to play, if they're going to continue to play 35 plus minutes, that being AD and LeBron, this is going to end up being way shorter than we intended.
That's the thing. The LeBron playing 35 minutes a night, wanting to play every game this season. He stated, I want to play every game this season. Two things to point out. He played 71 games last year for the Lakers. I think that was the most he's played since his last year in Cleveland, if memory serves. Like, I'm going to go to the basketball reference, but I feel like that's like the high water mark for him. Yeah, he played 71 games last year. He played all 82 in 2017-18. That was a long time ago when he played all 82 his last year in Cleveland. Because it was his last year in Cleveland, there was no Kyrie Irving. You play 71 games last year, plus the play-in, plus the Olympics. Something else that we
both
do not.
Both of them on the Olympics, too. Yep.
Right, both of them on the Olympics, which seemed to be very laborious. To be perfectly honest, like, Steph, his minutes have scaled back. Kevin Durant has been hurt
again.
Tyrese Halliburton has not been as good as we've expected him to be. Usually the Olympic Games were the thing that springboarded you your next season. It seemed like now, especially with Joel Embiid might be done. He might be double dog done. Not saying a guy shouldn't go. But if you're going to be an older player and you're going to play in the Olympics, you're going to have to do some things a lot different on the back end of how you're going to play your next season. Because playing 35 minutes for LeBron will not get it done.
You're right. I think that that's a crazy test case because, I mean, the funny thing is about the USA, I feel like they could have sent a lot of those select team players and we probably would have had a similar result. But the other international players don't seem to be fazed at all by the Olympic play. Giannis, Franz Wagner, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Young,
they're all young. Right. You can't be sending old heads over to the Olympics, man. Like, I think this is what we're seeing. And people talk about viewership. It's like, well, you send a lot of old dogs that are faces of the league over to the Olympics to go capture that gold medal. Now look at them all hurting, ailing. So, yeah, I feel like USA basketball's got to figure that out.
That's a great big question and a topic for another day that we're going to bring Dan Titus on when we have Dan Titus Wednesdays. Dan, my man, really appreciate you, bro.
No doubt, Vinny. Thanks.
We're going to take one last break and we'll be right back with Ice Young. Back here on The Good Word, Ice Young is joining us. Ice, how was your Thanksgiving? I have a feeling you got some energy about last night's Knicks-Orlando game on a bunch of different levels, the least of which involve Reggie Miller. Ice, the floor is yours.
Okay, so I'm listening to the game last night and obviously love Reggie Miller. I'm listening to Knicks game and I love Reggie Miller. I love listening to his analysis, so I'm always entertained. I always have him turned up. And he made a comment about maybe a rule that he doesn't like in the NBA or softness in the NBA. But he said little girl rule. Like, oh, that's a little girl rule. That's a little girl thing. And what does that mean? What does that mean? I thought we were over that. I thought we were over that to this point where we like diminish women and mention that on national TV. I think it was about technicals that were called as two guys were kind of going back and forth. And it felt soft to me. Soft is the word I would have used. I wouldn't have said little girl soft. I wouldn't have said little boy soft. I would have just said soft. And so it bothered me because obviously I believe in women in sports. I believe in equality and empowerment. And I'm saying these things like they're exhausting because they are. Because I just feel like in 2024, we really shouldn't have to have a conversation or no one should be commentating an NBA game or men's basketball game or any other sport, honestly, for that matter, and reference something in a negative way and say little girl.
Well, here's the crazy part, Ice. If the NBA was officiated like the WNBA, then wouldn't the WNBA be talking about, you know, that's a little man's call because there's a lot more physicality and a lot more stuff that is adjudicated on the floor in the W than it is in the NBA. So that's the irony in this to me, Ice, is that the NBA should be following the W's lead in some way.
Yes.
As far as allowing some of the physicality. Sometimes it get a little bit out, but I think by and large, the W has always been a little bit more on the physical side or trending towards the line while the NBA has pulled back from physicality. So that is a big problem there. Like just in terms of even if you didn't think what Reggie said was sexist or without ill intent, I don't know if it was with ill intent or not, but just the practicality of it. Reggie, have you seen your game?
Honestly. But even if not, I mean, speaking, aside from being a former women's basketball player, like just as a broadcaster, I wouldn't use the term little girl, little something,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
to speak negatively. Like there are so many other words in this English language that we could use to call something soft or non-existent or whatever, not a big deal. But to reference little girl is annoying to me. It just doesn't need to be there. It doesn't need to be said. You don't need to come for the little girls or, oh, this little girl sports, so it's sissy. I don't know what you're talking. It just made me mad. It just made me mad. And it makes me mad when the main voices of basketball do these things. We've talked before about.
It sets
the tone. We talked before about, you know, when there were certain high profile men that were talking in the WNBA and didn't know what the heck they were talking about. This to me is on the same level as that. So, yeah.
Look.
Happy birthday, though, by the way.
Yeah. All that good stuff. Yeah. Right. I remember I remember getting my front tooth knocked out playing basketball with a girl. That was my cousin. She was much more rougher than me. And yeah. See? I ain't never got my front tooth knocked out by no dude. You know what I'm saying?
It's a different conversation because I just believe a lot of people these days need their front tooth knocked out. And, you know, that would be the way to teach. But
we're going to get
different era.
We will bring you back for the love doctor. We're going to get this all out for ICE, y'all. We're going to get this all out.
There's no love here.
But yeah, we're going to bring it up. We're going to bring Jamel back. We're going to bring Monica back. We're going to do it all. Now, look, last night, Madison Square Garden, Knicks Magic, the aforementioned Reggie Miller game on the call, Carl Towns, Mo Wagner getting into it. It was a blowout for most of the game. Like, how did you see? Were you surprised? I guess I'll ask it. Were you surprised that game was as non-competitive as it turned out to be? Because I thought Orlando would have had a pretty good chance of coming in there and upsetting the Knicks with everything on the line.
Yeah, I thought they would have performed better. But I felt like going into it, it was going to be Magic's defense versus Knicks offense. Like, are the Knicks going to overpower them with their offense, score in all the ways in which they want to, get downhill, score in the paint, knock down threes, or are the Magic going to be able to come in here and stop it, at least with their defense, which then can give them some momentum offensively? I felt like they just couldn't get stops defensively, and then they struggled to score, which just made their style of basketball honestly hard to watch. Like, it was a very hard to watch, almost boring game if you're not happy that, you know, Kat and Brunson and whoever else is knocking down shots.
No, I thought it was funny, like, from the three-point line last night, like, Deuce McBride, or Miles McBride, he doesn't call himself Deuce anymore. Miles McBride was getting off. Carl Towns is a matchup nightmare on, especially when you're running 1-5 pick and roll with Brunson.
Yes.
Like, it's basically a pick your poison type of thing. I like Orlando, even without Paulo Banchero missing all that time. Like, Franz Wagner has stepped up to become an all-star player. I feel like Ice Orlando is one of those teams that the cup, or whatever the function of this thing is, has served well. Like, oh, Orlando's a team that we should start paying attention to now. Maybe otherwise you wouldn't have known who all these pieces are because they're in Orlando, and who watches Orlando?
No, I totally agree with you. I think that's the beauty sometimes of players getting injured, right? We hate to see it, but when players get injured, it leaves an opportunity for somebody or something or a group of players collectively to step up, and then for us to pay attention to them. Like, you go on a winning streak without your best player, who before, you know, Banchero got hurt, he had dropped 50 and was like seriously like becoming a force. You know, we spent time talking about him. So I feel like there are so many positives for them of what they've got from, you know, Wagner, how they're growing, and what they've shown defensively, again, without him on the floor. I think the question now becomes for them, though, and we've heard that, you know, Paulo is getting back and he's getting early stages of recovery. When he comes back, what does this now look like? Now, since we've seen Wagner kind of take a new level and a new step, similar positions, how can all of that blend and gel to where this team still remains one of the best in the East and offensively really can grow their game with Paulo back?
Yeah, that's one of those things where does Wagner, as a fellow young player, because when you're young, you're trying to find your way in a league.
Yep.
And you're trying to establish yourself. The natural thought that, hey, he's just going to step aside when Paulo Banchero comes back. Like, have you met these dudes? Like these dudes have a lot of ego, and rightfully so. Like, you're trying to find
all my life to be the main guy, absolutely, on an NBA team, absolutely.
And y'all want and we're winning, like we are winning too. We're winning games. Now, they didn't win last night; they got the doors blown off. But, you know, be that as it may. Now, Ice, you were a guard. You still play guard against, you know, in your pickup games and everything else. So I'm very curious what you think of the year Trae Young is having in Atlanta, because sometimes we think of something about a player and we don't come back to him, or we have a negative perception of him, you know, and we never come back and revisit that opinion. So I'm very curious, as a guard and just from you watching Trae, what do you make of his play this year?
Yeah, so obviously his assist numbers are up, right? He's averaging 13.8 assists in the last five games. He's had 22 in one game versus Cleveland in their big win, which was a really good win and a great game. 15 versus the Pelicans. But my thought with him overall, first to start, is I love when players are challenged in a certain area of the game, i.e. not shooting or scoring well, but decide to put energy and effort in another area of the game to get better and to make their team better. And so I feel like we know that the Hawks have said that they're going to live and die by Trae Young. There have been times in the past where he hasn't wanted to pass the ball, where he has forced and been a turnover machine, and it has looked terribly ugly in Atlanta. Now we're seeing a mature version of him in terms of his assists, where he's getting everybody involved. The attention that he, you know, attracts off pick and roll, pick and pop, the way in which he's playing with a lot of composure and not really allowing a blitz or double team to bother him. So I think from a passing standpoint, obviously he's doing the best in his career right now. He's leading the league in assists. But I also think it came out of him struggling to score a little bit. It came out of him not shooting or shooting career lows right now from the field and from 3-point. And so you're shooting poorly and you say, okay, I'm just going to keep chucking. I'm just going to keep shooting. I'm just going to keep whatever. Or can I spread the wealth? Can I get everybody else involved? And can we still win games like that? I also believe it's a long season. Hey, maybe right now, this is the way in which he sees it forward. Let's focus on my facilitating, getting others open. Maybe that gets me open a little bit more on the back end. I watch a lot of his assists. The ball isn't coming back to him. So once he gives that thing up out of the pick and roll or out of the dish or out of the two, they are looking to score on the other side. They're not wrapping that thing back around to him, and then he gets to go a second time, like often we see with more of a longer offense in the shot clock. But obviously, he's struggling to score. I think my point is that in him struggling to score, it's great to see a player take the next step in another area in terms of his assists and facilitating for his team. And they're on a 4-game win streak. So the unselfishness is the team mentality. They're winning. They're 11-11. They're 6 in the East. Not terrible.
I need you to bring this type of optimism to your love life.
No, you know why I can't do that. Come on.
Ice, you are speaking such life and positivity to Trae Young. And I do think in some way, you're right about having to revisit what we, you know, what we think about players. And with Trae, I thought he tried too much to be Steph Curry when he probably should have been trying to be Steve Nash, especially at his size, where let's manipulate the defense as opposed to taking 30 footers. Like, just because you can hit one 30 footer doesn't mean that you're Steph Curry. And I think a lot of those comparisons got in his head when he was in college, and the Steph Curry thing was new to us. So clearly it was going to be new to him. But the question I always have with him is, can he function on a team where he is not the best player and the main decision maker? You know what I mean? If
best there is player and main decision maker?
Yeah. Like, put it like this. Could he be on a team with Giannis Antetokounmpo?
You don't think so?
I don't know. I really don't know. Because I look at his game and I think he needs the ball. And if I got Giannis on my team, Giannis is having the ball. Giannis is making a lot of the decisions. And I think while what you're saying is absolutely true, because his assist numbers are up and the turnover numbers are right about where they were last year, except he's handling the ball a lot more and he's shooting the ball. So his usage is way up. And maybe the shooting will come up at some point. Like, he's too good of a shooter to continue shooting like this.
Yeah.
But just the question begs to me is, what happens if he's on the Orlando Magic? Could he play with Wagner and Paolo Banchero and not have the Lions' share of the decisions being made? Would he be able to maximize the opportunities that he has?
That's interesting, because I think we only know him as someone who's on the ball. You know, we only know him as someone who is ball dominant. And speaking from my personal experience, I experienced that, like, entering college being a ball dominant guard and then getting into a system in which it was playing off the ball. Like, it was, hey, you're a catch and shoot shooter, 3-point corner. You're a, hey, swing one more, next pass, cut, finish a play. But I feel like, though, with what he's showing us, I think there is absolutely potential for that. And like anybody else, there's opportunity to grow in that aspect. If he
he can't really grow. You know, I mean, maybe he's grown more hair. He's grown more hair, right?
Boo.
I know. I'm sorry. Throw me the tomatoes. I'm sorry. That was a
we
low
did,
blow.
And you're wearing red. Yep.
Yeah, I am wearing red. So we're gonna shift over to the W a little bit, Ice. Just breaking news that came down from the Connecticut Sun. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Rashid Messian as the new head coach. Been coaching in France since 2012. Head coach of the Belgian women's national team. I reckon you have a take on this, Ice.
A bit. First, let me say this. With the WNBA expanding, all things Caitlin Clark, the league is just in a new place, right? We've never seen it get this much attention. We have three teams that are coming in the next 2 years, which we'll talk about expansion next. And so it's an interesting time to be in the W because you're seeing things that have never happened before. What some of us in the W have talked about with head coaches is getting more familiar faces. Those who have played in the league, coached in the league for a long time, or played and coming back as coaches. Okay, this is a person who has coached EuroLeague overseas, which is obviously the highest, not the obviously, the highest level of basketball overseas professionally. He has coached several WNBA players, including WNBA champion Emma Mieseman. You mentioned, you know, the Belgium national team. And so it seems like his basketball pedigree internationally fits. The interesting thing is there feels like there's so many leaps and bounds between getting someone who won a title overseas EuroLeague and to coach in the W. There's college coaches in between there. There's assistant coaches on W teams right now. There, again, are some former players in the league who have become assistant coaches who I believe should get a shot soon at becoming a head coach. But for me, it's where is the league going? You know, where is the league going with this? And what we've seen recently of the other two head coaches that were hired to the W, where they were former college coaches. They were current college coaches. They were college coaches at Florida Gulf Coast, at Utah, who had been at their schools for plenty of years, 20 years, had winning seasons, and then decided maybe they wanted a new challenge. Maybe they're tired of NIL, and so they decide to come over to the W. So it's interesting, the take that the Connecticut Sun are using to bring him in. I wonder if maybe there are a few players that he's going to be going for and bringing back to Connecticut because of his touches and because of the teams that he has worked with overseas. But I don't know. Part of me is like, yeah, it's great that we're getting, you know, different international people to come and coach and we're building. But on the other side, I just don't want the league to miss out on bringing faces and legacy back to a staff. And
you lose some texture of what has made the league what it is and made the league attractive to bring someone like that. Now, you mentioned, and I'm going to, because we got to go to the expansion, but you mentioned that there were some coaches that you think should be getting looks but maybe haven't gotten looks. Give me a few of those.
Yeah, so one easy one is Breon January, who oddly enough is an assistant coach for the Connecticut Sun. Now, she's only stopped playing maybe 2-3 years, but in her playing days, she was the ultimate leader. I have heard raving things about her as an assistant coach, and maybe 2 years post playing is too soon, but another 2 or 3, she would be the JJ Redick equivalent of a hire in the WNBA, which if the Lakers can do it, I don't see why any WNBA team couldn't do it. So that's someone that completely, like, immediately comes to mind for me. Another one is Teresa Weatherspoon. I mean, you know, we were upset. I believe we as in the whole WNBA community were upset when she got let go by the Chicago Sky, and she is coaching with Unrivaled, but I would love to see her back in a WNBA team. And she can coach in Unrivaled with Vinny, and I believe still coach in the W. It's two totally different seasons, different contracts. Right. And so I think that could exist. But those are two former players who have played in the league, who have left a legacy, who are well-respected, who I believe, if given a chance to be a head coach, would build a team and be able to do something in the W. And again, I think it's so important to keep these former players and legacy tied to the league. Yes, you bring in newcomers. I'm not saying we can't have anybody new here, but I also think there has to be a balance.
Yeah, I think, like you said, that's the key word is balance. You don't want to alienate the people who have laid the groundwork, and you also want to be inclusive to people who want to add to your game as well. It's a very hard line, and as we've seen with leadership from the W, everybody has criticisms and critiques of how things have been handled this year with the new attention, and now you get the new TV deal and everything else. And now we have expansion. The Golden State Valkyries, they're going to, you mentioned three new teams. They're the first who is going to start play, and which means they have to have an expansion draft. I'm very curious how you think that's going to go. Who are some names that you think that they could pick up? Because a lot of times, number four picks don't make rosters. Like, this is this has been a necessary addition where you're going to have more talented players being available. Who are some of those talented players, Ice?
Yeah. They get to pick 12 roster players, and they get to pick one from each team around the W. And they actually only get one unrestricted free agent. Out of all the picks that they get, they only get one unrestricted free agent. Yes, I know, I know. What I think is going to be so interesting is that this expansion draft is going to hurt the teams that have depth. I think about the Las Vegas Aces, and this is one team that I'll give an example for, but they have a core four, right? Asia Wilson, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, Chelsea Gray. Their other three that they play are Tiffany Hayes, sixth player of the year, Kia Stokes, center, who started with Asia, needed for defense, and Alicia Clark, another one who's been a sixth woman of the year. On each team, you can only protect six roster spots. On each team, you can only protect six roster spots. So you're looking at the Aces, and that's just one example. I could do the same thing for the New York Liberty, a team that's super deep, or the Connecticut Sun, a team that really used their bench. But if you can only protect six, one of those players who's either gotten you a championship or won a sixth player of the year or whoever, you have to let go. And chances are they're going to pick them up. I think the other interesting thing is teams weren't allowed to tell us the players that they protected. I would like the list. I want to know who somebody thought was valuable and somebody didn't think was valuable, at least to keep. And it doesn't always mean your top six players. Obviously, it's about what you care about as a franchise, what you're trying to build. A lot of it depends on the pick that you have in the next WNBA draft, which the Valkyries have the fifth pick, right? So decent pick. And I believe it's going to be a deep draft this year. I think the talent this year, especially if some players come out, maybe don't take their extra year, I think it could be a very deep draft. So it's hard to say what players, you know, teams could take because you don't know what players were protected. But for the teams that we know have deep benches, this is going to be tough. The other thing about, you know, the Valkyries and their GM and head coach, they are well respected. They're able to trade. They don't have to worry about salary cap, which is a beautiful thing. You can get whoever you want and then figure it out later. And normally in the W, that's pretty tough. I think the last thing interesting enough, too, is there will be a huge focus on rookie contracts or younger players in the W because the new collective bargaining agreement is expected to be signed and created in 2026. And so rookies and the young players are going to be that much more important because with new TV deals, it's expected to have bigger salaries. And so some of these young players that maybe you think, we don't necessarily care about, we didn't really see much of a Kristen Bell or so-and-so at the end of the bench, are going to be that much more important to the Valkyries in terms of adding to their roster and building for the future. So I'm excited for it, but I think it's going to be kind of like a random huge, you know, pickup game where you're picking 12 people from 144 and we only half the league is protected. And half the league sounds like a lot, but, you know, it's only 12 teams and
it's necessary.
11 or 12 women. So
it's one of those weird things where we've been talking for the past couple of years, like expansion is necessary. But then when it happens, you're like, oh, how does this process work? In the NBA, when it happened in when the expansion boom happened, I believe in from like 87 to 95, if memory serves, teams were only allowed to protect eight players. So if you had a roster that went nine deep, you were screwed, right? Now it's six. That makes it even tighter, which I guess the league is saying, we want Golden State to be more competitive as quick as possible here, as opposed to, oh, you're taking back end of the bench type of players. You won't field a competitive team. I understand the thinking on that. And you also want to be able to see how water rises. You want to be able to keep the salaries. I think that's a big part of this too, Ice, as far as like the salaries rising, keeping rookie costs down, but making sure some of that money goes to vets. Because as we know, you can suppress rookie salaries and while also not giving the vets their money. And each side is pointing at each other like that Spider-Man meme. Like, wait, you got my money. You got my money. No, no, no. They got your money.
Right. And nobody's Jalen Brunson here, who's not going to be getting their full check to sacrifice for a team to win. We don't live on that side over here, so that's not going to exist.
No, you don't sacrifice. No. You do not sacrifice at all. And ladies and gentlemen, that is Ice Young. Thanks for joining us, Ice, as you will do each and every Wednesday. And we will get the segment For the Love of Ice started one day quite soon. Ice, appreciate you.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks to Dan Titus and Ice Young for joining us each and every Wednesday. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back on Monday for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.